Planning Commission study session for October 22nd, 2019. Any announcements? No? Anyone?
Just another reminder that your annual update to the council is going to be December 3rd.
The last one.
Is that the last?
Before
your last one.
Yes.
Speaking without giving away the annual.
We're going to have a big earthquake and we'll fall into the ocean.
And then...
So when is it again?
December 3rd. December 3rd.
This is the first... Very confident.
We'll remind you.
Absolutely, yeah. The Derek does a great job of... See, these are all the permits we did during the year. I will go take, you know, credit.
Take questions.
And the only other item, the council at the last meeting... We had on their agenda under consent if they want to move ahead further with having the Planning Commission explore a possible amendment to the plaza space standard, specifically in the downtown. And so that takes initiation, and say they voted to initiate having us continue to work together on looking at. So,
okay, great.
So we'll figure out, hopefully, before the end of the year, we'll have a study session, go over some options.
Okay, thank you. We have one person who signed up for public forum and exhibition. If you could give your name and pronounce it correctly, I'm sure I didn't. Your 3 minutes of glory.
Anything is fine. I like today, there's no cameras.
No, you look good.
Fuel's got you in 2253 Highway 99. I read in the paper yesterday. Oh, it was so fun. The cottages down there are going to have a shared electric car. I just was so happy about that. Because I've been reading all this stuff and you know that EVs are coming and it is a solution. And then it said something, I'm not sure. I think this is all private. I don't think it has anything to do that Mark Knox or somebody was. And then it kind of said, I wasn't sure, that there was going to be EV chargers at every cottage. Well, anyway, I'm bent on trying to get EV-ready wiring. And that's got a variety of definitions. EV-ready wiring for all new, which is like our Melbourne, and they're talking about it in all these other commissions. Because if you do it while something is being built, it's way cheaper. Especially if it has to run conduit under a sidewalk or something like that. If you put that conduit in first, then you push the wires through. It'd be nice to have the wires there too in some kind of junction box, but just the conduit. You don't even have to see it when you're done. But they need to know where it is to find it. Now, that's not to include the charger, because each car has a different kind of charger, or there's some that are really good, like Stuart's got down by the bank. I think it was the juice box. Those are highly rated, and they have an app, and you can do all kinds of things. They're waterproof. It's better to keep them inside the garage or parking area. So that's a really neat thing. Well, they had this since 2014 in California. What they say is just make sure there's enough electricity provided to each residence. It's just for houses and duplexes, and that's about it, really. As a law in California already, just run the conduit. Or make sure there's enough electricity there. Well, Tom McBartlett says we have enough electricity everywhere anyway. And also there's a whole bunch of people talking about not having any natural gas added to the Berkeley's debt. Those are really no-brainer. But having enough electricity so that everything in the household we use and all the appliances and everything and the electric car, I think Tom McBartlett wonderful thing to hear.
thank you for your comment. We have one item, really, with two sub-headings on the this discussion item today, and we have one person that wanted to speak to that agenda item, Neri Montaneri. Three minutes. You can give your name where you get started.
My name is Montaneri. I want to thank everyone for the hard work, staff, commissioners, and the public. And I like the direction of the changes that are being made in the code and the clarity that's being added to the code. The following issues I'm highlighting are issues I discussed with Mark Knox. He knows I'm here speaking tonight and is in agreement that a consideration should be given to the following codes, all under 18.4.2.030.h. So 3.B and 3.C propose two issues. One is dimension of decks, patios, porches, etc. The other is open space not being within 12 feet of recycling and refuge disposal area. So the second point, I would just say if it's enclosed, it really shouldn't matter. That's the same as like having it in a garage. So starting back to point one, Mark and I discussed the concerns of drunks that can collect on decks and stuff because of the lack of storage space. However, I urge you to consider how much storage space is needed for multiple people living in a three-bedroom, two-bath versus like a 500 square foot unit serving only one person, and to make the code reflect that variable by allowing for flexibility within the space that's generally not ideally shaped. For example, a 48 square foot requirement, 6 foot dimension for units over 800 square feet or for ground floor and upper, and then 45 square feet with a minimum dimension of 5 feet for units less than 800 square feet for lower and upper floors. Essentially, almost the same square footage, just allowing for two different shapes. This is most alarming to me because not all lots are ideally shaped, and the difference between 5 and 6 feet can adversely affect density, and I know this for 100% certainty. So I urge you to strike this from the proposed code changes. 2.C proposes common open space shall be located within the required buffer perimeter yard or setback area. And I'm wondering what's behind this proposed change. The perimeter yard setback area will likely get incorporated into an abutted common open space since it ends up essentially being unusable dead space. Why discount it completely and restrict the area that's so tight and irregularly shaped in a town with insufficient developable space left to meet its goals? Most alarming, I believe, is lots would suffer from this proposed code change. And properties such as 260 Avery, for example, highlighted in the buildable land survey, is a good example of a lot that would likely drastically suffer from this reduction, this restriction. Unlike a square lot with four perimeter lines, this one has eight, and it results in almost 4,000 square feet of restriction that could not be used along the lot lines, and that's only counting 6 feet for the rear yard setback. This proposed restriction space represents over 31% of the total lot size, and that amount is 210% in excess of what's required to fill the 10% common open space density bonus under 18.3.9. I urge you to strike this proposed code change, because it will adversely affect density. And one more, if you'd like to hear.
Be quick.
Okay. 3.8.II proposes a minimum area required for private open space shall not include ingress, egress area. And what's behind this, I wonder as well. In order to make this part of the code clear to readers and designers, and thus more cost-effective to applicants and to the city by resulting in less staff work, please consider removing the ambiguity. In this case, most all spaces need ingress paths to be useful, and it seems reasonable to supply minimum square foot and dimensional requirements. Basically.
Great. Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
So we have one thing on the discussion item on the agenda. Draft amendments to open space, to open space standards. And are you on the hot seat for this?
Yeah, I think so. Sorry, I have a little bit of a cough, so I have a cough drop in my mouth. But I thought what I would do is maybe, I think most of the notes are pretty self-explanatory in the draft, but I thought I'd hit a few highlights because I thought they were more notable than other things. So on page one, under C, 1C, ownership and maintenance.
This is the draft ordinance?
Yes. I forgot to highlight what was added there was, or by an association of owners, homeowners association. So maintenance of open space shall be the responsibility of the property owner or by an association of owners. That's really to cover, again, this part of the code can apply to a type of subdivision. So it really needs to apply to both the multifamily scenario where there's one property owned by a property owner and their rental units versus a subdivision. So that was the reason for that. And then under D, I, the common open space language was different before, borrowed the same exact language from the chapter on public improvements that covers streets and utilities. So it's really about timing when those open space improvements are required and allowing those to be deferred if there's some kind of financial security provided, which is common practice already. But I think it's clarifying that in the code. And then on page 2, pedestrian connection, I think there was a little bit of confusion about this at the last meeting. The idea behind this is that once a development provides that minimum area of 400 square feet, 20 by 20, then you can count pedestrian walkways and multi-use paths. So it really is referring just to be above it, and that's what the language is trying to do. Is say after you meet that threshold, then you can count the walkways. And that last sentence was something that the commission wanted added at the last meeting. And then the ingress and egress section under 3, A2 or double I, is that was something that the commission asked be specified at the last meeting. We use 36 inches because that's also what's used under building code, typically as a path to a, you know, to and from a door. And then the commission also asked under C that the balcony depth be increased to 6 feet. And then let's see, on page 5, that was just, we pulled in that whole section on density bonus for the multifamily zones, which is located in a different part of the code, and use the same language from performance standards to try to make those two sections consistent. And on page 9, under 3, the commission asked for, the way I understood it at the last meeting, was some kind of accounting for when people are doing major recreational facilities. So that sentence about the detailed cost estimate was added for that reason. And then the mays were turned to shalls because everywhere else in the code, the density bonuses are referred to as shall. And under B on the previous page, it says the permitted base density shall be increased by the percentage gained through density bonus points. So that was change for consistency. And then on the definitions, we just pulled in ground floor dwelling unit and upper floor dwelling unit. That was embedded in the code language before, so they're really definitions, put them in the back, and updated the open space definition based on comments from the commission. And then the final thing in terms of the draft, which is mentioned in the memo, is the issue of the terminology and how to do handle the open space references in the ordinance. And I think the commission started to discuss that at the last meeting, but really didn't finish that conversation, so we're looking for some direction on that item. And that's it.
Good. Thank you. Any questions?
I guess my question, my first one on page 2 is similar to the young ladies. Do you want to just go through it? Or? So the question on the open space not located in the required buffer of the perimeter yard, I had the same kind of question she mentioned. Is that always going to be the case? Do we do that now? Or are there going to be times where the open space captures some of that?
There could be. I mean, you know, I think one way to look at it is if you have a minimum dimension for an open space of 20 by 20, then that might not be as much of an issue. I think in past site visits that the commission has gone on, you know, like on retreats where we'd look at open spaces afterwards, where there were really long, kind of narrow areas that were setbacks on the perimeter of the property. I think in general there was some discussion of not, you know, thinking that was a really functional space. Yeah.
But if the larger block of functional space included that setback area, we're accomplishing the same goals, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, it might be something that you discuss among the commission and give us a sense of where the group is at on that, because that could be taken out. That is new language. So
I guess my feeling, just from my own point of view, is if it did qualify as a large enough thing to be the open space, if it was a large functional space, to me it wouldn't matter if it was part of the setback area.
The other thing I guess I should mention that we see, and I think the commission has seen before, is where existing front yards are counted as open space, and sometimes there hasn't been complete satisfaction with that approach. But
because it's not functional.
Well, a lot of times what happens is you have like a house, an existing house, and a lot of area behind it, so the back gets developed, and then they'll say, well, our open space is going to be everyone in the development is going to use the front yard in front of this individual house. And, you know, functionally speaking, I don't know if that's... I mean, maybe that works, maybe it doesn't. Sometimes it seems a little far away in terms of... It seems like a private front yard. And it's been used that way. And if the house stays there, then sometimes that's awkward.
How does this prohibit that? I'm not catching that prohibition.
Well, it says setbacks.
Okay.
So, you know, the front yard setback is anywhere from 15 to 20 feet.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not going to argue against that, because that's what I didn't like about the cottage thing. We just approved that common space at one end, so I understand what you're saying.
Any other questions? Comments?
Yeah. Did we solve fences under Ash?
Yeah.
It seems like a thing we've talked about before, but it wasn't clear to me. The requirement shall not apply to fences located on properties adjoining. But I thought the issue was, even on the developed piece of property, if it abuts residential, so it would be a fence on the developing piece of property, not a fence on the adjacent property.
Yeah, it's already in the fence code that if it's within the development, that it can only be 4 feet in height.
But what we've said...
Like if you have an open space and a subdivision, you know, around like two lots on either side of the open space, then those fences can't be 6 feet. And that's their side yard. They couldn't be the standard.
They can't be the standard
6.5 feet high, because that can make open spaces sort of feel very closed in and maybe not very visible in terms of safety.
I thought what we talked about before, Haywood's mentioned several times, is it's a budding residential, that we could have a 6-foot fence there.
Yeah, I thought the comment, and maybe I misunderstood at the last meeting, was a concern from, I think, Mark Knox submitted a letter, and I thought what he was saying was it shouldn't apply, like, if somebody's backyard is on a new subdivision,
right,
and their fence height shouldn't be affected, you know, by what's going on.
Definitely true.
Yeah.
But I think what we're questioning is whether we could have a 6-foot fence in the location on the development property adjoining a neighbor.
Yeah, oh yes.
But
yes.
That's not what this says.
No, it's a next to common open space.
Yes, we're asking about next to. Suppose you have your common space in between two developments in your development, but then... So they're on this side and your neighbor's over here. Why couldn't you have put your own 6-foot fence here between your open space and your neighbor's property?
Well, you could. I mean, in practice, that's in the fence chapter. It says it's limited to 4 feet, and then probably for the past 10, if not longer, it's been a condition that those fences are only 4 feet in height when they're adjacent to a common open space.
Even when it's going to someone who's not in neighboring property, not in the development?
No. No, it's when... So if you're next to a development, but you're not within the development, then you can have 6.5 feet if it's your side or rear yard and it's not a corner lot. But if you're within the development...
What we're asking is why can you not build a 6-foot fence in that basically that same location, I mean, just on your side of the property line?
Well, you wouldn't be abutting the open space then.
What if you were? Why wouldn't you be?
It's not your open space. You know, you don't regulate. You know, if we get a permit for this property, we're not regulating this property over here.
I understand that's the way it's written now.
Yeah.
The question that's being raised is why couldn't, if you're doing a development that has an open space that's adjoining a neighbor's property, why couldn't you put a 6-foot fence there if you wanted privacy from that neighbor that's not part of your development?
On the property line?
Oh, yeah, on the property line. Can you do it or
not? I guess I'm not clear. This is a side of your property line,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fencing the open space.
Right, you're fencing the open space.
Against the neighbor's private property.
Against the neighbor's private property.
But I think that's already allowed. You can put a 6-foot fence along the private property.
Except it's not. That's what we're questioning. At the moment, it says only the neighbor can do that.
I guess you're talking about who's installing the fence.
Yeah, so
that sounds like what it is.
It almost like it needs to be written. I don't know if it, you talk about rather than neighboring property, or should it be a mutual property line? Should we be referencing a property line versus? Because you're right. I mean, it probably.
May want to fence their open space and work out with the neighbors. They may want a 6-foot fence.
Yeah.
And it says you can't.
And the neighbor might not be able to afford doing it. The developer
and
agrees to pay.
The approval.
Yeah. Well, we can. If that's what everyone wants, we can.
Mm-hmm. I just don't think we should prohibit it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have to just be located on the property situation. It just could be, you know, in the abutting or you know on either side of the property, but on the joint.
On H, how are we going to determine that? So a credit may be granted, but I don't know what the objective standard for that's going to be. It sounds like it's discretionary for us to do it. So people would come in and say, I measured it, I want my credit, and we go, nah.
We could say shall.
I was wondering about the same thing, and I might have said, if it's an exception, then they have to, like, at least, I don't know if
I'm even in favor of it. You know, I'm not, I don't know why.
That's my point, is I don't know what we're doing if we're saying you automatically get it, but may doesn't seem to work. I wouldn't know how to apply may.
They may not want it.
And they may not want it.
Exactly. We so shall force them to take it, even if they don't want it.
I just wonder if we really want to write the exception in the code.
I mean, it doesn't say how big the park has to be, a teeny park.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand that, really. You know, it's sort of a collateral issue if you have proximity to a park.
Yeah, that's a good comment.
Or the paid park STCs, or, I mean, usually I see something like this worked into a bunch of other exception, or do something else to get this credit.
Yeah, it's sort of a... Something where you get something for it.
Right. You did something so you get relief in this way.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I had a similar comment as our speaker about the recycling and refuse disposal. I wasn't sure. It looks like that's existing code.
Where is that?
In B3B, the ground floor dwelling unit.
Okay.
No, that's not existing.
Okay.
That's new language.
So I don't understand why private open space gets wiped out if you're close to recycling.
Yeah, it was a, when we did a code review of a lot of other jurisdictions, it was one that came up. I guess it's probably, you know, functionality of the private open space and how that could be affected by the garbage.
I think it's a good point, living in a community with a central garbage area, and even though we really do try to keep it clean, it smells. And we clean it. Yeah.
The question is, do you get to count it as private open space, I guess? I mean, that's a marketable, functional question.
Anything else?
Well, I mean, I'm just like, our speaker suggested that it was fully, that if it was enclosed, it would be like a garage. Perhaps if it's fully enclosed, like a garage, like it has a roof on it.
Yeah. You know,
and all of that, not just like a fence. Mm-hmm. It might be okay.
In my experience, that's been me.
Sometimes. Which
I okay. Down?
And then we're on the major recreational facility calculation. My recollection of what we talked about was some kind of look back. And maybe I don't remember the discussion completely, but I think the mischief is that there's a lot of incentive on this development part to say real market value low, recreational facility cost high. Because that helps them on the formula coming in. But then at the end, real market value ends up, what they actually sell it for, ends up higher and costs end up lower because they save money or they find cheaper things than what maybe they expect in the first place. And my concern, what I thought the discussion was can we build in a mechanism to make sure that if the estimates aren't right, or we got lowballed at this point, because they never have to come back here, how do they have to submit something at the end and make it right? And so the development really is getting the percentage of amenities promised. So what I think, as I read through this, what I think is still just a front-end estimate.
Yeah, that's what I read.
But not really a look back, like at the end of the project, you have to demonstrate to somebody, building or whoever, whoever signs off on it, that the formula you presented really pencils out at the end, and you got to make it right by the development.
Or within 10% or something.
Or something, but some mechanism that makes, so there's no mischief, so there's fairness, what you promised to install, because it's a percentage of the calculation. Somehow at the end of the day, I thought we'd said, let's take a stab at creating some sort of certification that the value all pencils out at the end without going into all the detail. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just not sure how it could be administered.
I'm more concerned at the end, like a certificate of occupancy versus at the building permit stage. You know, when they have more detail, you know, their level of their drawings, there might be a possibility at that point where they have the actual, I don't know, manufacturer's and they present it with the building permit.
And presuming are the people that do building permits are supposed to be pretty savvy about that, otherwise they wouldn't be charging the right amount of SECs. They're supposed to be able to know whether it's a fairly accurate estimate because we charge money based on value.
Well,
process.
No,
we don't.
We don't.
I don't know what the answer is, but I would still like to see us take a stab at drafting some sort of certification that says you delivered the value for the development you promised, and that's what we approve.
Yeah.
Because you know those numbers then change at the end, and sometimes they might just change, you know.
Yeah,
market fairness, but I think sometimes it's open to mischief unless there's some, like Melanie said, within some variable that's acceptable.
Do you think it would?
No, I think, so what you're saying is that the quality of the estimate is probably a lot different, or it's maybe a lot general when it's at the land use planning or land use application stage, but when it gets to that next step, there should be an opportunity for them to really drill down with those numbers.
If this is going to be our formula, yeah, it's based on the numbers going in, and then I think there should be some certification that the numbers ended up the way you said they would be.
Mm-hmm. Aside from the one that got knocked down, when's the last time we've had one of those? Maybe we should just get rid of it. Just being really radical here, suggesting that something that we never use is really complicated might not be that useful to have.
Yeah, I mean, all the uses that we put into it are pretty, you know, not really that anymore. Let's see, swimming pools and stuff like that.
At least it evolved quite a bit.
Well, I think I was concerned about the, again, kind of the definition of so-called major recreational facilities, which are gathering places, and the only real control on that being anything other than just a picnic table in the middle of a lawn would be this cost issue. You know, how much money do they spend on it? And then you get into this conundrum of how do you even make that, you know, honest or... So maybe it's just worth it.
Maybe you have a point because we got burnt on the last one. And the only real reason for ever doing it is to make your units more saleable. Mm-hmm. There is no other reason for having the functional open space that you can use any way you want. And the developer could put in anything he wants, but the only reason for the developer to spend any money there is to make whatever he's selling more saleable at a higher price. So maybe you're right. Dump it. Give it up.
It does reduce the... If we just dumped it and didn't replace it with something else or increase the amount you could get for other like common recreational open space, we're effectively reducing the potential density.
But if it's never used, it's kind of a charade anyway.
It's never been used. Maybe you try to get used once, but...
Yeah.
And this time next year, we can always put it back in.
Right.
Did you have any
other... That was kind of mine.
Okay. Yeah. Which?
I looked at G play areas on 2. Play areas for children are required for projects including 20 or more units that are designed to include families. Play areas are eligible for common open space. Okay. Now that we've eliminated that other section, play structures go away. So, you know, that goes away. But what is a play area for children? Often, most of the kids quickly figure out the play structure, you get bored with it, you end up making up games on the lawn. So that's really your play area. How big does that have to be? And then, projects that are designed to include families. For some people, I'm a single parent, and I have one child, I think that's a family, and in this day and age, a studio apartment is a lot better than my car. So,
yeah, that's tough because there's a definition of family that includes less than 8 unrelated adults.
Less than 8, so...
Yeah, or any number.
So it seems like it should be for any project, 20 or more units, any of those units could take family. Maybe not under the conditions we might like to see, but for them, we're looking for housing, that may be good. And then also the area of what constitutes a recreation area for children. I think we can leave it the way it is as far as a play area for children for long, but this thing about...
I agree. Design for families is unclear, given...
Yeah.
Families can live in all kinds of spots.
Unfortunately, they do.
You could have a senior project that clearly I mean, we could require them to provide something for their grandchildren, but the children aren't living there.
That's basically where the line's drawn, because there are quite a few senior facilities that are built. And more will be built that aren't designed for children, and they specifically say in the chart that children can't live.
And I'm not sure that we should be requiring it for studio apartments, even though I would not prohibit, prohibit people from living in them with kids, but I'm not sure that...
But when you say designed for families, would mean anything other than something designed for seniors.
True.
You don't have to have kids to be a family, do you?
No.
No, but what does it mean to be designed for families? Families,
exactly.
Anything other than a place that prohibits children, really, is theoretically, possibly at least, designed for families.
Okay, so I'll just seek to, not that I want to disadvantage children in any way, these playgrounds are wonderful, but I do think that in a place that's predominantly studios, like, for example, the one that's being built, it's not likely there'll be many children there, and to build a commercial-grade playground equipment spot is quite expensive. You know, it's not like putting, you know, a little swing set from Lowe's in your backyard. and I'm not sure that we want to burden people with that.
But then I think the question is, how do you exclude that? You know, maybe, I think all that's been suggested is figure out what you're trying to go to.
Define it.
Define it.
I would define it probably as senior projects and ones which have 90% studios or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that.
Looking at that.
Well, that's what I was asking. What's a play area for children? I mean, it's over in the other section was clear. You put up structures, whatever. But what's a play area for? What's a play area for children? So, and then maybe it does need to say something for projects that are designed not to prohibit children. And then that way, that gets you the senior. That basically says senior. But now, whether you can say that legally, I don't know. But of course, I think the first thing we should try to do in the town is get some projects that have more than 20 units. I mean, we did get the 60 on Garfield, but of course, we could with the annexation get all those units, all those apartments up there on the. That's way over 20.
So I'm just wondering again if it's it's been in the code a while, has it?
Yeah, it's existing language.
We're not exactly sure the
down.
Purpose. Is it necessary? Maybe rather than to rework it. Yeah, well, that's, yeah. I know over the years, even I've got asked by somebody who's designing, well, what do you want to see in there? You know, because just sort of like this discussion, and it
sounds like we're going to just dump it. That's give it up. Because we've tried hard to get the open space to cover everything we're actually trying to say if we're not talking about play structures or structures of some sort or other.
Right.
So the open space covers everything we're looking at. Yeah. All we have to do is make sure the open space. It's not a long, narrow, 3-foot wide strip that gets us where we want to go.
Right.
If we do better than that, then we're doing okay. So maybe you've got a point. Don't play it. It's hard to define.
I think of the project that was that very dense project on the corner of East Main and Mountain, which has a lot of units and not very much open space. Very functional, and it does, but it does have a small area for kids, and I think that their kids will use it because they're not likely to run and play in the middle of that little tiny courtyard where they're going to annoy everybody.
You know, but they go across the street to Garfield.
They're going to play across the street.
That's where I would. They go
field, you mean?
Get out of eyesight of mom, dad, and neighbors
well,
across the street.
Anything else? I had a broader concern about the statute. You know, it wasn't exactly what I expected. I thought we would like go through the code and look at every place that open space is mentioned and go, okay,
which of these definitions we want to apply here and here and here. And previously we had sort of a defined term, capital O, capital S, open space, that was in the definition section. And now we're getting rid of all the capitalized stuff, which I think, I didn't envision it that way, but I think your idea works better for that. But there are a bunch of places in the code where that defined term is still in there, so we need to go out, go scrub that, find where they all are. There's, you know, 20 or 30 of them. There's, and then the other thing I think is that there are a lot of areas of the code. I mean, I think this is a great piece of work for 825.080, 839.050, 824.203. It's really a big step forward. I do think we need a definition of public open space, you know, like we have of common open space and private open space, because that's used a bunch in the code. And a definition of open space use, because there is a use called open space that's in, or is it Chrome?
Yeah, I thought that probably should be deleted. No, there's a zone in Chrome, a normal, and North Mountain. There's an open space zone.
Yeah.
But as far as in the use table, when I looked at that, I thought it could just be taken out. I mean,
yeah.
It says like public park, open space, something, something, you know, and it
just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But then there's a bunch of places where we in the code could acquire or talk about open space that this definition, you know, with no all caps, is going to apply now. And I think that we're creating unintended consequences that we don't know about by putting the definition in the code and not going through and looking at all those.
Well, I have. I mean, I have. This
yeah,
is it right here.
Too, and I think there are problems.
There's 135.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. I mean, the manufactured housing ordinance mm-hmm. says 5% open space, and it doesn't say common open space or private open space. So just, hey, put in a yard. You know, that's open space. Mm-hmm. That you know, that would comply.
Unless we put common.
No, it says open space.
I know, but I guess my suggestion was to put common in front of it, say common open
there,
space.
There, yeah, but that's not in the ordinance here.
Well, it's in the new set of definitions.
It's in the new set of definitions, but it doesn't change the language in the manufactured housing ordinance.
Yeah, so
that just says open space.
Right, so the suggestion was to go through these 135...
Yeah.
Instances and where it's referring to a true common open space, put that word in.
Yeah.
Change
yeah.
And there's a bunch of places like the PSO ordinance, the section before this one, section 040, actually defines open space as a public use. It says public use is like open space. And adequate provision of open space has to be there, not adequate provision of common open space. So that needs to be figured out.
I think we're applied to 135 of them.
Yeah, right? I don't know.
Are you bringing them back as part of this, or how?
That
we
was the idea.
But
you really hadn't discussed it as a commission, so I didn't. I was hoping you would, so it was kind of a little more clear to staff where to go with it
yeah.
before we start. Yeah.
I think we got to just look at them all, and I would recommend, you know, a small group, or I know you guys are shorthanded. I'm happy to help look at it and with your, you know, guidance. Okay, what did we mean? What do we think we mean? But in like Chrome or normal, there's a bunch of places that open space is used. One time, you know, in one sense is natural space is to be preserved. And our definition of open space says for public or private use. So that doesn't quite fit. You know, some public spaces, some of it's boulevards. You know, boulevards and park roads are described as open space in a lot of places. And maybe we mean something else over the open space. I don't know. I think we do need a, what it was concerned me when I saw this, I thought, oh, okay, this is all we're going to amend.
The other thing is you should go back to using capital letters, initial caps, in places where you want the definition to clearly apply and modify the code accordingly.
Thank you, counsel.
And leave the rest of it, leave the rest of
the
it,
lawyer solution.
Lower caps,
yeah.
Which can mean something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could. I thought actually Maria's, when I got to thinking about it, that was my initial, you know, because, you know, you can.
We like that. Yeah.
Define
yeah.
it. Right. We can't. You know, bold.
It might be good for us planners that aren't quite as sophisticated. It could change over time.
We did. Yeah.
Go well, Maria. Makes a lot of sense.
But I think but I like her idea better.
But I mean, I think you would want to define it like open space, not capped. Means, you know, it means land that's not going to be developed. Right? That's what it means.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No?
No, it could have a deck in it or something. You know, it could have, you know, play equipment in it, that's development.
Okay.
Grading, rock walls, fences, all that sort of stuff.
So you're saying you want to create a subcommittee to study this and mm-hmm. kind of get it done and let the rest of us know how it went?
No, and then bring it back instead of all of us
in a
group going through every, you know, and discussing everyone.
I think that's
five.
So you want to
I don't think all of us would come out of that room. I'm happy to work on it, but help Maria on it because I know you guys are shorthanded.
One thing that I thought would help me if I had a copy of this. If you took all the underlines, all the shades, all the pink, everything, and actually gave me the code as we discussed it, and I would still have this, but to read the code through without all this, I find it's very difficult. I could put on a developer's hat and start going through it mm-hmm. and reading it and seeing specifically what it says. I mean, I can see that, but it takes an awful lot of work to figure that out with all this, because and see it. And then I also, just a general comment, as I said, I went through a number of open space ordinances for other jurisdictions, and much clearer, much boom 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 boom, but it does not have a density provision in it. And it's when you put the density provision in there, when you do this, you do that, 5%, you start mixing this density up. But because of the way all the urban growth boundary requires us to work with density, we really have to have that bonus. And those other jurisdictions don't have the land use system with the urban growth boundaries and the limits that we have and the decision that the council has made to try to increase the density, and that's a way to do it. So you can't take the density bond. I just don't think you can do it. I think if the density bonus wasn't in there, this would read a lot clearer. And I'm not suggesting you can't go there, but it would help me to read it if I had. And then so maybe that, if we did that, either the subcommittee or whatever, we might have to come back to another one of these meetings and discuss it again.
Produce a clean copy.
That's pretty easy. You just eliminate the comments. They produce a clean copy.
But I mean, I there is no title, but I don't have the ability to. To do that, but I think it's. Troy was saying for the one point, I forget what it was, but he said, if that's the one or there's two, see if it works. If it doesn't work, come back next year. I think we're pretty close, especially if we eliminate the major recreational facilities and maybe the children's area, a couple of things. I think we're a lot closer than we were, I think.
Okay, any other comments? Did we further confuse you?
No.
Okay. Let's keep going then.
I mean, the only thing is, is there consensus about what to do about the terms? The open space, the 135.
Yeah. Oh, how to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, who else wants to work on it? I'm happy to.
I'll work on it.
Okay. You and me and Maria sit in a tree.
I think at the end of it, if you could do you know, the summary of some of the big macro things too, if you, you know, as the big terms are defined, you know, so much of what Roger says is kind of pinging through my head. I mean, I imagine a one-page summary with all these changes behind it, because there's going to be some macro changes, like, you know, all the open space stuff that really functions as parks, we just changed to a SOAR.
Changing a park.
Or, yeah, or whatever it is. I think there will be some big macro changes that will save us, you know, just getting our heads right on the first page before we start going through all the track changes.
Oh. So.
Yeah. Part of the this code...
Do you mean like more than like a staff report?
Yeah, I guess it really is more of a staff report, even shorter, you know, just... As you guys work through as a little subgroup, if you hit on those macro things that are going to apply to 20 or 30 changes, just to capture that, mm-hmm. so we get the big picture things, the aha things that work group changes.
Yeah, and I think you're right. We may find a different word for something because this code uses open space.
That's what I said. Just
more than I've like ever seen right any code use that term. I mean, look at the Seattle code. It uses open space. Twice, for residential open space required of apartment developments and for, residential amenity open space and for open space for office workers for big office buildings.
That's it. That's why we live here.
Huh? Exactly.
That's why we live here.
There's not residence there.
There's open space. There's open space. There's
open space. In many forms.
And Roger, I'm just the open space in Seattle is the roof deck, 280 feet up.
Yeah, we're offering also to be part of the work group, and I think having private citizens as part of the movie work groups can be really enlightening also. So
we're going to try to do
this. Okay.
Well, we are. Right. Good morning.
All right.
Good. At least I think I
that is what we're doing here.
Did Mark submit a...
No.
Did he submit a letter? No, he submitted a letter on something else. On
right.
Second.
No. Okay. I was thinking as the reading went through, it would have been nice to see that
written
down. Yeah. I understand it faster.
So,
okay. What about A2? Do we have to initiate an application for legislative amendment?
Do we need to do that now? Or?
You know, I'd recommend it's just a proceed. It doesn't mean that the work group can still go through and then when we come back, it's more public hearing. I mean, it doesn't, at least it just keeps, it's one less step we need to do.
So do we need a formal proposal for that?
Yeah, I mean, anytime we start moving down the process of focusing on the specific legislation, either the council or the planning commission needs to
have a vote. So like just a motion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a motion. Yeah.
I move that we initiate an application for legislative amendment to revise open space standards.
Second.
Yeah. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed or abstaining? Or sleep? Right. No. Thank you. Do we have anything else for the good of the order?
Does it look like the annexation, they're going to get their information in so it can be in the November meeting?
They've indicated they want to, yes. But we know.
Yeah, Derek wasn't sure. I was very disappointed you guys didn't get it done while I was gone. But I
guess that's why it didn't happen.
I hope I can go to a site.
Go to the dark room.
Any idea when that might be?
Monday before?
A site that just, yeah.
Oh,
that's
Monday
all
it's
going to
do.
It allows us not to go to the site and not have them show up.
You know,
very next night.
Even though this time I think that Monday is a holiday.
Yeah, he said it wouldn't be because it was Veterans
Day.
Yeah, so we'd probably be looking at the week
Friday,
before.
Friday.
Or Thursday or Friday before.
Well, we're adjourned then.
Yeah, we'll let
you hang around. Have some fun.